You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Ladies, we still have to talk about Ukraine today because, oh my gosh, this is just tragic and heartbreaking to watch. And the buildings being targeted and the beautiful historic cities and towns and buildings that they have in Ukraine are just being smashed to bits and children are dying. I don't think that this is going the way that Russia planned it to go. And I have to say that I absolutely admire the heroic courage of President Zelensky. And I don't know if both of you heard his speech the other day, speaking directly to the Russian people. It just was so eloquent, and he's a true leader in our time. This is a man that was a comedian, and he has just risen to the occasion. He has risen to the courage for his people and for his land and his patriotism for Ukraine and for their freedom. I'm just so impressed with him, and I'm so fearful that their goal is to assassinate him and to deflate the will of the people there. And I just, that would be heartbreaking. So I do want to continue to talk about Ukraine. We've talked about it a few times, but the news is different every day. And the news today that I found a little bit uplifting is two pieces of news. One, that Russia is pretty bogged down. I know that they have 40 miles of all kinds of arms and munitions and tanks and trucks and supplies going into Kyiv. But on the other hand, they are bogged down because the people are out there fighting. They are setting explosives in the roadways. They are, you know, shooting from distances. They're doing whatever they can do to slow this down, and it has. And secondly, the EU has come in to help Ukraine and help them with their power grid. And I know that you read something about that, Irit. Can you talk about that?
They've agreed to link power grids, which will, you know, Ukrainian power grid to the EU's power grid, which will give the Ukrainian people an essential, you know, source of energy that they desperately need since this war of aggression was launched by Putin. And now I think the Russians have intensified their shelling of residential buildings inside Kyiv. And just these heartbreaking images you see of families and mothers and young children huddled in bomb shelters, in makeshift bomb shelters. It's just heartbreaking. And I think residents are still, you know, scrambling to escape Kyiv. But I don't think anyone should underestimate Putin. I think he's reckless. And I think, you know, while he miscalculated the resistance from Ukraine, and he's becoming more isolated, I think he's not going to stop until, at the very least, he extracts more concessions from Europe that were imposed on him in 2014 when he invaded Crimea. But of course, all of this is a distraction to Biden's presidency, which has been, you know, his approval ratings are falling. And, you know, we'll just have to see how this plays out. I know the EU has shifted their focus too, with Germany in particular, which has spent the last several decades trying to forge a relationship with Russia. And 10 days ago, you know, barred weapons from being transferred to Ukraine. They refused to recommend that Putin be kicked off SWIFT, which was the international money transfer network. They've totally reversed their decision. Chancellor Olaf Scholz from the Social Democrats now has increased his own military spending, and has reversed those previous two decisions in regards to Russia. So I think, you know, Europe now is doing a little bit of a 180 and coming to the assistance of Ukraine. Zelensky just gave a very powerful video address to the EU today, where reports are that he brought his English translator to tears and he got a standing ovation. He certainly, you know, has been heroic throughout this ordeal.
I have found him to be beyond inspiring. I don't think that there hasn't been a leader who has truly demonstrated the concept of sticking up for your country and sticking by your people in such a long time, you know, and actually taking action to back up his words. I just think he has been the most incredible inspiration, and, you know, every leader should aspire to that. But somehow, as I'm sitting here watching this 40-mile, you know, brigade that's about to encircle Kyiv, and I'm, you know, what it feels so un-American to me to sit there, to sit back and watch some autocratic murderous thug take over another country, which was, you know, no one asked for this war. No one provoked this war. I don't understand how we can sit there and just watch that. And I just wonder if there is, if the America, you know, if our country is going to covertly do something in the middle of the night there or something like that to somehow resist that 40 mile, you know, transport that's moving towards Kyiv, and that's going to be there within a couple of days.
And it would have to be covert, as you said, Elisa, covert, because we cannot actively get involved. Can I comment on something that you said there?
Yeah.
You said that nothing that Ukraine did provoked this. And I want to just kind of look at it through Putin's eyes right now, because he feels that they did. And he has a somewhat reasonable assumption there, in that Ukraine was actively trying to be a part of NATO. NATO had not accepted them. They had given them some hurdles to overcome before they could become part of NATO. But don't forget that when you are part of NATO, an attack on one is an attack on all, and it will be responded to by all. Well, Ukraine has been toying with the idea. I don't know if the toying is the right word. They have been considering and looking to get nuclear capabilities in Ukraine. Ukraine is very, very close to Moscow, very, very close to Moscow. And if they did get nuclear weapons, that would be a direct threat against Moscow. And I believe that is part of the impetus for which Putin went into Ukraine. He could not allow them to get to the point where they had nuclear weapons or became part of NATO, because then that would be a bigger attack on him, which is why I think he did this now. In addition, he did this now because we have an impotent, weak president who he knew would do nothing about it in the way of military strength. So all of those things combined, if you're looking at it from his point of view, he had a fear. Now, on the other point of view, it is absolutely true that he wanted and has wanted to bring back the glory days of Russia and have all of this land part of Russia. So that has always been in his mind to do. It just, when you say why now, in my mind, I believe those three reasons I just gave are the reasons why now.
You know, I think you're right, Linda, in that part of, you know, Putin's reasons behind his aggression lies in a sense of nostalgia, you know, for the old, you know, Soviet empire. And Ukraine, in fact, did denuclearize in the 90s in exchange, I think it was called the Budapest Memorandum, in exchange the US, the UK, and Russia would guarantee Ukraine's security if they gave up nuclear weapons. Now, this should be a lesson, I think, for all countries and American allies, including Israel, that you really cannot rely on a larger country for your own security. You must be self-reliant. And, you know, I don't know if Ukraine's looking back and rethinking its decision, you know, to denuclearize, because now, you know, it's effectively put them in this position where they're relying on larger powers to protect them. And you have Zelensky, you know, essentially begging in his video address for arms.
That's exactly what I was going to say, how they had denuclearized, you know, as part of that deal. So I think my sense is that Putin sees this entire time as he's an opportunist, and he's taking the opportunity because we do have a vegetable sitting in the White House. And, you know, so the time is ripe for him. And, you know, if you look at it from his perspective, and I even when Trump said Putin was brilliant to do this, Trump wasn't saying that this was the right thing to do, and he wasn't making a judgment on whether Putin should or should not have entered into a war. What he was saying, I think, the way I took it, was that Putin was brilliant in the sense that Joe Biden, he knew that Joe Biden is a total weak nothing and isn't going to do anything. And so, you know, the time was right for him. In that sense, if you're looking at it from Putin's perspective, I think that's true. I think that, to me, it seems from what I've taken from this entire ordeal is that he just wants the Soviet Union back to the way it was. And he's kind of wanted that since the time also, when he went into Crimea and he took over Crimea, that was just another part of his tactic. And he was waiting for the opportune time to move into Ukraine. So to me, I see it being, you know, I think the Biden administration should take an enormous responsibility for this, because whether or not they're weak, that is exactly what they have portrayed. And of course, I do think that they are weak, and I'm waiting for them to do something covertly, like we just were talking about a second ago, to derail this army of trucks that are moving into Kyiv. I'm hoping that we're going to see some sort of strength somehow coming from the White House. I don't think that I understand that we're not going into war against Russia, but it just seems we have to somehow do something to bolster the Ukrainians and to help these people. I think it is horrendous also that he has sent bombs into children's hospitals and preschools and kindergartens, and, you know, he's attacking civilians. And I just, that if any other country was doing that, that would be a red line for us, you know, in the United States.
Absolutely. And the thermobaric explosives that he used in the last day or two are considered to be war crimes. So I want to know what the world is going to do about that, because these explosives, which are also called fuel air explosives, FAE, they're extremely horrible. They use oxygen around them to generate a high temperature blast, and that blast has the ability just to vaporize people. And even if you aren't vaporized, which generally you are, there's a pressure wave that comes with it, which is why they call it a vacuum bomb. And that pressure wave, it ruptures your lungs. And if the fuel starts on fire but doesn't detonate into a big explosion, then the victims are severely burned and will inhale the burning fuel. So it's a no-win situation. You're going to die a horrible death. And these are forbidden to be used in war, and he's doing it. So, it's a very fine, frustrating line here, because we don't know. They talk a lot about Putin's mental condition. And, you know, he's, I don't think he's different than he's always been. He's always been kind of a Hitler-esque kind of person. He's always ruled with an iron fist. He always has had these illusions of grandeur for Russia and for himself. So I don't know that he's any different. You know, I do notice something that's a little bit disturbing to me. If you look at pictures of him when he's in meetings, he is literally at one end of a table by himself, and anybody else in the meeting is literally like 40 feet away at the other end of this huge, long table. That's kind of strange to me. He seems to be very, very paranoid about COVID and who knows what else. And, you know, if you remember history, then some of the Nazi leaders and the World War II leaders were assassinated by their own people. And I don't know if Putin is afraid of that. The fact is, he has almost 6,000 nuclear weapons, probably about 1,500 of those that are ready to go right now. And he's the guy with his finger on the trigger. And he's already mentioned it. And we don't know his mental condition. So that's why this is a very choreographed dance between the world and Putin right now, because they don't know what they don't know right now about his mental state and his willingness to push those buttons and create a world conflagration. So, you know, we want him to be punished and to be humiliated and to be stopped with what he's doing, but we also don't want to make the wrong moves to make things worse. So, and, you know, that being said, I believe that Joe Biden should have done something long ago when the saber rattling began. We should have been bringing missiles and anti-aircraft missiles and aircraft and weapons and things into Ukraine weeks ago, months ago. And so they would be better prepared to stop this, but we didn't do that. And now we can't do that.
It's interesting, Linda, you bring up a good point. I've noticed too in pictures, I think I recently saw a picture with Putin, maybe with someone from Germany, an official from Germany, and sitting on opposite ends of an enormous table. And it struck me as odd as well. And in fact, there was somebody last night who was speaking, a former Trump official, who said that in pictures, Putin does look more bloated, doesn't look well. And, you know, that type of bloating you see on him is indicative of perhaps he's on some type of medication. There have been reports, too, he's become paranoid, screaming at, his inner circle, the National Security Council. So, you know, that's definitely something to look out for. The correlation between his actions and weak leadership, I think, is an important point, because, you know, his first invasion of Crimea happened right around the time Obama reneged on his red line when it came to Syria. It mm-hmm. also was around the same time that the Iran nuclear deal was negotiated. So, you know, that's no surprise. And today, the fact that he felt free to invade Ukraine, you know, it's because of you know, we do, while the onus lies with Putin and only on Putin, it's because of the weak leadership that's surrounding him. Yes, it's because of Biden, but you know, look at the rest of Europe. World War II, we had Churchill. There are no Churchills today. You know, we have Macron in France, Scholz in Germany. The world is really void right now of strong leadership, and this is what happens.
Well, that's a powerful thing to say, and I totally agree with you that we have a woke world, which is pretty useless in handling conflicts like this that maybe the world thought were gone and weren't going to happen again, and which is a very naive outlook, because it's going to happen again in the next few months or year with Taiwan. This presidency, in my opinion, has just changed the face of the world forever. I mean, these people in Ukraine, they can't bring back their loved ones. The rebuilding in Ukraine is going to be just a huge, huge amount of rebuilding and things that can never be recovered, not to mention the lives. This is horrible. And then we're going to see the same scenario play out with Taiwan, because President Xi is watching. He is going to do this during the same presidency They're not going to wait for a Trump to get back because Trump won't allow this. So this is a big mess, and we're all going to suffer for it. Sort of it is that this is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for the people there. I truly hope that the U.S. Can do something like send in covert operatives. I know that people around the world are flooding there, people that are willing to help fight. And that's a good thing, because when this is over, as far as the bombing and the shelling and the destruction, and as Russia takes over Ukraine, which they inevitably will, they're going to have an insurgency war there forever until they're back out of there. So, you know, people are helping. And I just think that we're walking a fine line here.
You know, one thing I don't understand is why we have not cracked down on buying Russian oil. Like, why is the Biden administration so resistant and moving on with this ridiculous climate change thing and this crazy agenda? Why aren't they talking about becoming energy independent here and you know, not being dependent on foreign sources of fuel? I cannot understand how they can. Is it just because they are playing to that far left wing? I mean, is that what this is about? It seems so stupid.
You're absolutely right, Elisa. I don't understand it. And, you know, people, believe it or not, I've heard people blame Trump for Russia's invasion of Ukraine, that he was, you know, in cahoots with Putin, where Trump was the one who imposed sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. When he spoke, Trump spoke strongly and with confidence, and you knew where he stood. Where, you know, Biden, that's just obviously not the case. And then he removed sanctions on Nord Stream. And while everybody is saying, you know, these sanctions that have been reimposed on Russia within the last week, that they'll do, you know, grave damage to their economy, it's really not clear whether they'll do much damage to their energy sector, which is really where one can hurt them.
Yeah, and the United States has the oil and has the natural gas to fulfill the needs of Germany and other countries if we would just use it. And for us to be buying almost 600,000 barrels a day from Russia ourselves, and I mean, that's just incredible to me that we would be buying oil from any enemy of ours. We have it here. And I know Jen Psaki just said that he's not going to open up the Keystone pipeline because that would take, they'd have to finish the pipeline, and then it would take time to ramp up and get the oil going. And then the oil would have to be refined, and then, which is done here in Texas, and then it would have to be used in the U.S. In the meantime, if we don't start, for heaven's sakes, we'll never get there. So we need to start, and we need to stop giving Russia our money. That's number one. And number two, we need to be energy independent as we were under President Trump, instead of buying oil from our enemies. This is just common sense. We obviously can't run our airplanes and our vehicles and our ships and our rails by wind power. So, I mean, we have to use what is available and what works now. And this whole oh my gosh, climate thing is just off the rails in my mind.
Yeah. And if you want to go, okay, let's just say we're gonna follow that green agenda, and we're gonna become, you know, green energy, whatever, you know, over the next however long. By the time we do that, by the time we have the technology and the infrastructure to become whatever they see us as being green, it's gonna be, that's not happening tomorrow either. So they're cutting off our air that we need to breathe, basically, in order to, you know, satisfy some crazy, to me, what seems radical far left agenda. And in the meantime, you know, we can't even function properly. So, or either that, or we're going to have to buy the Russian oil and, you know, and finance Putin's objectives in the Ukraine. So the whole thing just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand why we wouldn't open that Keystone pipeline today and start, you know, get that up and running as soon as possible. And if you want to continue on with the green agenda, fine, but you can't cut off your nose to spite your face. You can't shut down, you know, the needs that we have in order to run our entire economy here. It just seems so crazy. I don't understand what's behind that. It's got to be the far left progressives.
It's the far left progressives, and Russia is paying close attention to you know, our outsized focus on green energy and climate change. I think our adversaries are paying attention to our behavior as well. I mentioned before how the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, was negotiated the same time, around the same time as Putin invaded Crimea. And, you know, right now, the P5 plus one powers are trying to resuscitate the Iran deal, just as Putin has gone into and invaded Ukraine. And that's not a coincidence. And it worries me now that this has hardened Iran's position. It's emboldening our adversaries. And if, you know, reports are that a deal may be imminent within the next few weeks, a shorter deal, a weaker deal, and Biden will come out of it and couch it as a diplomatic win for himself. And I guess it bears mentioning to Zelensky, you know, Putin went in and said that he wanted to denazify Ukraine. Well, Zelensky is actually the grandson of Holocaust survivors and is Jewish. So it just is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think Zelensky knows, you know, he is loud and clear on what the outcome of anything like that is, you know, having his background, which is why he's vowing to fight till the end. I mean, who wouldn't? You know, the whole Iranian nuclear deal really scares me. And I think that they see an opportunity. They, just like Putin sees an opportunity with a weak and impotent administration that we have here. So, you know, it's the time is ripe for them to try to get that nuclear deal through again. And that brings enormous danger to Israel. I cannot imagine, you know, what are the Israelis going to do? Are they going to have to, you know, are they going to have to, I don't know. Are they going to attack Iran and attack their nuclear facilities in the meantime? I mean, they have to do something to deflect that threat against them as well.
I think Israel cannot allow Iran to become a nuclear power. They just can't do it. Whether or not the current government has the will to go in and do it alone, I think they have to. I don't think they have a choice. They certainly cannot rely on the current American administration, who has a policy of appeasement towards Iran. In relation to the situation with Russia, Israel has had to do a diplomatic dance of sorts in the United Nations because of, you know, Israel needs that flexibility to bomb Russian airspace in Syria to counter the Hezbollah threat and the Iranian proxies there. So it cannot come out so forcefully against Russia, although they were, you know, coerced a little bit to sign on to a UN resolution condemning Russia by the United States, by the US ambassador. I think Lapid, who's the foreign minister of Israel, said they would definitely sign on. And then I heard that they didn't sign on, and then they ended up signing on to the resolution condemning Russia. So Israel has been very careful. They've shown tremendous support for the Ukrainian people. Israeli rescue workers have gone into the Ukraine, and I think they're doing a lot behind the scenes, but they have to be very careful, you know, with what they say publicly.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCl to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCl may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit genesisfogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at genesisfogger.com/outloud.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutLoud.com.
Welcome back to Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Today, I would like to introduce our hosts. Today, we have Alisa Akron-Gold. And Alisa was a television producer. She worked on Good Morning America Sunday in 2020. She is a wife and a mom, and she hails from Connecticut. And we have Irit Tratt with us today. Irit has been a lot into philanthropy. However, she is also a freelance writer, and she writes for the American Spectator, and she also has three kids. Irit, you have a new place you're writing for. Give that a plug real quick.
I've just had articles published in various publications, including the American Spectator, Jerusalem Post, the Algemeiner, JNS, Israel Hayom. Those are just a few of the publications.
Okay. And Irit is also a mom, a wife, and hails from New York. And I'm Linda Martinelli, and I am from Texas. I am a business owner and also the host, along with my husband, Dr. Ron Martinelli, a criminologist. The show is called Talking While Married, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every evening. So we'll see you there. So, Irit, we have a new Supreme Court justice nominee. What do you know about her?
Well, I know Biden, President Biden, even before nominating Ketanji Brown Jackson, he said that he wanted to put a African-American female on the Supreme Court, which is fine, but it effectively eliminates 97% of everyone else. So he had, you know, in looking at nominees, he nominated Ketanji Brown Jackson, who hails from Miami. She grew up in Miami. She went to Harvard. She comes from a law enforcement family and is a distant relative to Paul Ryan, the former vice president nominee. So I thought that was an interesting tidbit. She also would be the first justice to serve, who served as a public defender, which I think is interesting. In terms of her judicial philosophy, when she was a public defender, she represented Afghan terror suspect, Key Ali Ghul, who was held in Guantanamo Bay for more than a decade. And then he was repatriated to Afghanistan by the Obama administration. She won't need any GOP support once she goes before the Senate, because Kamala Harris is the tie-breaking vote. So really, Biden just needs to bank on all the Democrats voting for her, which for now, it seems like everyone's supportive of her. She, in nominating her, Biden really caved to the party's progressive base, because Congressman James Clyburn wanted Biden to nominate Michelle Childs, who was really the preferred choice for a lot of Democrats. She was also a product of public universities, and she received past support from Republicans like Lindsey Graham. But then the progressives just started criticizing her because of her record, saying her record was not supportive enough of workers' rights. So Biden, heard their calls and ended up nominating Childs. So my thoughts are that the Republicans will grant her, as they should, a respectful, committee hearing, and she'll have to go through the nomination process like everyone else.
I don't have any objections to her per se. The only thing I didn't like was the fact that Biden said that, he, for a long time, the courts haven't looked like America, quote unquote. Well, I don't really look at the Supreme Court as like a reflection of, if we have X percent of Black people in this country, then X percent of the court should be Black. Or if we have X percent of Latino Americans in this country, then the X percent of the court should be Latino American. The Supreme Court is, it's like, you want the best of the best of the best, no matter what color, what race, what your upbringing was. You want the best and the brightest person in there. And I just don't like that precedent of saying that the Supreme Court doesn't look like America, so therefore we have to make sure it's a Black female, so to speak. To me, that just seems like, you said, we're crossing out 97% of other people who may be as eligible or even more eligible and more appropriate for a Supreme Court position. That's the only objection. That's the thing that bothers me about it. And that's the direction, it seems that this country's going in. The other thing is, is he doing this just to sort of stir up the Black vote? It just makes me think, like, is this a politically motivated nomination, or is this really somebody who is the best person that we could have picked for the Supreme Court? That's all.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Elisa, because 97% is a lot of people to eliminate. And my interest also is that we have the very best person for the court. And if you want to get really technical and be really petty, then you could say now that the court will have two people of color on it, then it's actually overpopulated, because the Black population is only 13%, and that will make it more than 20%. So, that's a ridiculous conversation to even have. I don't care either what race they are. I care that they are uniquely qualified and that they are, I guess the word is originalist, that they are constitutional scholars, that they are going to follow the Constitution. We have enough judges in this country legislating from the bench. And this particular person has been overturned a number of times, and she hasn't written in the job she's in now. She's only been there about 8 or 9 months. She only has written one opinion, which just came out in the last couple of weeks. So, we don't really have that much to go on for her. But if the main thing, the main two principles were that she's a female and she is a person of color, that's not enough for me. And I agree with both of you that we are not going to have a say in it because Kamala Harris is going to have that final vote. But I just think that it's a consistent problem in this administration to not do things for the right reasons and to bring race in it. We seem to have these goggles on that everything is viewed in this prism of race. And that's not how the world should be. It should be the qualifications and the intelligence and the ethics and the morals of the person for any office and not race. That can't be a qualification. So the race is incidental. It's not the main reason. So that's, like you two ladies, that's my issue as well.
Right. So I think that's going to be a criticism throughout the nomination process, is that she doesn't have enough opinions, recorded opinions and experience. She just joined the DC Circuit Court of Appeals in 2021 and has only handed down two opinions. So that's not a lot to go on. I also feel, you mentioned, Elisa, how Biden has said he wants the Supreme Court to look like America. Well, I would argue that part of that is not continuing, and I'm both parties are guilty of this, to continue nominating people who are graduates from Ivy League universities. I think it's, we haven't had a publicly educated justice in 50 years. And if we really are to, believe in our education system and encourage, our children to study in our public institutions, then we need to let them know that they'll be, considered for these high-ranking positions after graduating from these universities, and that that Americans will promote graduates to influential posts. I think there was a piece in the Wall Street Journal, it was a year ago, about, maybe a CEO, I don't remember who wrote it, but it was somebody who said he stopped hiring people from Ivy Leagues because they just were not as driven as some of these other students who attend public universities. And especially given that a lot of these Ivy Leagues have gone so woke, I think it's time to look elsewhere for our future leaders and to consider kids who don't necessarily get the opportunity either for resources, because of resources or other reasons to attend these Ivy League universities.
Oh, and for sure they are just as qualified, if not more qualified, overall, just in general, some of the most educated, intellectual, intelligent kids out there are not being admitted into the top universities for these woke reasons. And so I agree with you 100% that the future has to, it has to be much more well-rounded and much more well-researched when they're picking, an appropriate candidate for the highest court in our country. No question about that. I want to switch the subject for a second, just because something's been bothering me lately in terms of like who we are going to be. I guess very soon this year, the both parties are going to nominate or going to announce who's running for president in 2024. And by every indication, it certainly seems to me that Trump is going to run again in 2024. And as much as I support him and as much as I agreed with all of his policies, and there were a lot of things that I didn't agree with in terms of how he picked fights with people and how he called people names. I just felt like a lot of what he did was very unprofessional and unpresidential. And I thought that he didn't need to do that. He was winning without that. And so I worry that people are, that he's still going to go in that direction and that he's still very, very focused on, the fact that he lost that 2020 election and it was stolen from him. And to me, it seems like he should be talking about now, with all the problems we have, I think what people loved about him so much in the beginning was how he seemed to have solutions that no one else was coming up with to the problems that this country was facing. And to me, I think that he should be focusing on what the solutions are to our current problems, as opposed to looking at how that election was stolen from him. So I don't know. I'm still not decided on whether or not I think he should run. I kind of feel like I'd like to see some of the younger Republican leaders step in there who have the same policies that he has, but just don't have that inclination to offend people the way he does, the way Trump does. What do you guys think?
Well, I think that, he doesn't want to give those solutions right now for obvious reasons. One, he doesn't want to give those solutions to Biden, but secondly, because it's not his place right now. He's not the president. So it's not his place to be saying what he thinks in all these situations. And I agree with that. I think that it's not his place, but I think that when he announces, if he announces and he starts getting on the campaign trail, then he will talk about, the things that he will do and the solutions. I do believe that. I believe, as you do, Elisa, that he didn't need to be as kind of crude as he was at times. But on the other hand, I have never seen a president treated the way he was treated. The disrespect, the false accusations against him, Hillary Clinton and her team making up the whole Russiagate thing and trying to get him impeached over something that didn't even exist. And then the news media going after it, everybody going after him. I just honestly felt so badly for him. And for that man to have accomplished as much as he did with that kind of vitriol and legal activity against him for his entire 4 years, I have to admire the thing that he did is he gained us respect in the world market again and in the world and world politics. He kept at bay the things that are happening right now, inflation. He made us energy independent. He had China wrapped up. And China was the first to say, if you've never seen it, you should take a look at it. And I'll try to get the link again. But there was one of the generals from China right after the election of Biden, who was speaking to a big crowd in China and said, with President Trump, we couldn't do anything. I mean, we couldn't make headway anywhere. We were kind of tied up. But now our friend is back in the office and all of our options are open again. I mean, that's just scary to me. So as much as Trump is divisive, I think that sometimes we need somebody to shake things up. And because he's a businessman and because he understands business instead of just politics. And I love some of our politicians, but politicians that have been there forever, that have never had their own business, that don't understand money and how it works and all of the different things that business people understand, what makes the economy work. I think that they're at a disadvantage as well. Trump demanded respect and he got it from the world. And quite honestly, every single race and person in our country was doing better for him. And the world was doing better for him. And as somebody that travels around the world, I can tell you that the world does not like Joe Biden and the world did like Donald Trump.
I know. We were abroad last year and we met, some families from the UK, and they cannot believe Joe Biden is our president, that we elected someone like him. Now, I think what the Republicans have going for them is that we have quite a few of incredible people on our side who could run, and all of them would be terrific. You have Ron DeSantis, Mike Pompeo, I like Nikki Haley. You have a lot of opportunity there. Where on the Republican side, on the Democratic side, I mean, they keep talking about Hillary Clinton. I have a feeling she's going to run. And if not her, you know, I don't think they're going to run Biden again. So then there's, you know, Pete Buttigieg. I think there's a serious dearth of good people on their side. So Trump, as you know, won the CPAC straw poll this past weekend. I think he would certainly have the support of people on the Republican side. Whether or not he can win over independents and Democrats who've become disillusioned with their party is another story. I loved his policies. I don't know how beneficial it is for him to continue talking about election fraud. I think it turns off a lot of the independents and a lot of Democrats who he will need in a general election to succeed. Now, I said that to a friend of mine, just, you know, who's on our side. And he said, Reed, I don't think people even care if he talks about it anymore. I think people are concerned about inflation, about illegal immigration, about, you know, what's going on in the world. They're not concerned about him, you know, talking about election fraud. So, we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think people wake up in the morning and they are worried about inflation and the prices at the gas pump. That is first and foremost. And, you know, so fine. If he does want to continue talking about the 2020 election, okay, fine, whatever. Let him also, we know he's going to deal with the inflation issue. But going back to what Linda said, I think no question that he was viciously and unjustly attacked from day one. From the time he came down that escalator, he was under a siege from everybody. So that's 100% true. But I also think that he gave them red meat to go on as well. You know, there were other ways he could have handled it, maybe that, you know, didn't allow them to continually pounce on him like that. I mean, they probably would have anyhow, but I just think that he could have handled it but you know, maybe after 4 years of it, he came under such intense pressure, he just couldn't take it anymore. So I get that too. I don't know, but I hope that if he runs, he's going to end up just tempering himself a tiny bit with that. So we'll see what happens.
And I hope Hillary's in jail, because Hillary, yeah. I mean, that was absolutely treasonous what she did, making up this whole Russiagate thing. And so far she's been Teflon about it. And it's just, I don't know. I hope that Durham does his job. Hey, one more piece of news to talk about, you know, Alejandro Mayorkas, who's in charge of our border, right? Our Homeland Security Secretary. He's in charge of our border. What a great job he's doing at our southern border, right? just got put in charge of responding to the threats that come from the Russia-Ukraine crisis. I mean, this just can't get worse for me.
Well, why are they? I mean, one would assume that if they put him in charge of that, and that's going to detract his attention from our own border.
Well, he never gave any attention to our own border. Right, the Border Patrol just can't even tolerate him, and they don't respect him at all. But yeah, I mean, this guy, I don't know what we think he's going to do. That's like, you know, putting Kamala in charge of finding the root causes of anything. And I'm just wondering if she's still out there looking for them or what, because if she wants to come to my house, I can tell her exactly what they are. I don't know. This administration just, it just could not be. The only word I can think of is impotent. Everybody in it is completely useless in making anything happen in a good way. And the decisions that they make are always behind the eight ball. And, you know, that was, speaking of Trump, one thing that I really liked about him, he was in front of the issues. He was in front of them, not behind them. And he saw what the issues were, and he took care of it. We're always like, you know, coming in way after the fact when the damage is done.
Oh, that's for sure. I mean, I still get the feeling that, you know, the Biden people are sitting there trying to catch up with Putin. I mean, you get the feeling like, were they even aware that this was going on? I mean, hopefully they were, but they do not inspire confidence 100%. Not to mention the fact that, you know, how in the midst of this whole thing does Biden get on a plane and fly off to Delaware for a weekend of relaxation in the midst of this?
He goes every weekend. That's what he does.
I know. It's, I can't even imagine. Like, Trump never, ever, he was on the case 24/8. He was just constant, and you knew it, and that inspired confidence in people. So, you know, I hope that this administration just takes a shellacking in November. And I hope that if it's going to be Trump, I'm putting prayers behind him. I'm putting all, you know, support behind him as much as possible, because we have got to get these people out.
Here's my perfect running mates: Trump with Pompeo, and then Pompeo with DeSantis. Four years later.
That would be great. That would be great. I mean, I love DeSantis. I feel like we need him in Florida. Florida to me is like the last bastion of freedom in this country. That state has just been incredible through COVID and through, you know, various policies they've put in place related to education. I just want to mention too, what about Kamala Harris has been noticeably quiet throughout the Ukrainian crisis too. I think she gave some bungled response within the first day or two. And then she's been very, you know, quite absent. Maybe people are telling her to quiet down. And I just think that if somebody like Pence were there, you know, he's just so, you know, he has integrity and he speaks thoughtfully, and he also speaks strongly. If only we had, you know, someone like him in there, things would be different too, because we'd have some confidence that there was a capable number two in the office.
Yeah, I think they probably have told her to go into a closet somewhere and not come out for a while, because every time she opens her mouth, it's just embarrassing. But you're right. I mean, with Pence, you kind of got the feeling like if anything should ever happen to Trump, you had a willing person, a capable person behind him that you could 100% have confidence in. If something were to happen to Biden, which, you know, every day you're kind of wondering if he's going to make it, you know, we're going to have her as our president. I mean, that is horrifying to me.
That's horrifying. I can't even imagine why he would have picked somebody like that, because in California, where I lived at the time when she was the district attorney or the AG, whatever she was, that nobody liked her. And the interesting thing is that she absolutely was the hardest on people of color. The people of color hated her there. So what's funny is that she just said, she made some comment in the last day or two that was that people got what they voted for in Biden and Harris. Well, that's absolutely true. They got exactly what they voted for, which is why I did not vote for them. But you know, I'm so terrified for the next 3 years, because I just feel like it's going to be the three longest years in American history. And sending off prayers to the people of Ukraine, and sending off prayers to our administration that they get some common sense in how to deal with this, because this could absolutely blow up to something even worse.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.